Case for argument is Chris Skofik v. Village of Orland Hills. Mr. Carlson.
Good morning, and may it please the Court. My name is Keith Carlson. I'm here on behalf of Plaintiff David Christofek. We're here because seeking the reversal of Judge Deryagian's order entering dismissal of the plaintiff's complaint based upon his finding that the plaintiff had not properly pled or effectively pled that he had engaged in speech on a matter of public concern. David Christofek was a part-time police officer in Orland Hills, Illinois. He was terminated after he reported political corruption to the FBI. We believe this is the very essence of speech on a matter of public concern. As this Court well knows and has written, each of you, that reporting matters of public corruption is a matter of public concern.
When did he determine that it was a matter of public corruption?
I'm sorry, what?
When did he determine that it was a matter of public corruption?
He initially, when he was given the order to destroy and fix the traffic ticket and eliminate evidence and release the jailed subject, he immediately protested to the supervisor who granted him that order, saying, "This is wrong. I shouldn't be required to do this." Then, months later, he's doing a training where, oddly, a fantastically similar set of circumstances were presented during an electronic training, at the bottom of which there are two Illinois cases cited that explained that what occurred was a crime. After that, he then went to consulted with a private attorney. After consulting with a private attorney, he reported to the FBI his concern that a crime, that public corruption, had occurred. This is the essence of...
He needed that seminar to determine that there was public corruption? Or did he need to determine at that point that he might have some exposure?
At that point, he realized that he personally had exposure, that his coworkers had exposure, that the village may have exposure. In addition to that, I think it crystallized how bad of a situation he had been put in by his superiors when they ordered him to destroy evidence, release somebody, and fix a ticket.
But what are we to make, Mr. Carlson, of the 5 months between the initial recognition of inappropriate behavior and a decision after that seminar? Doesn't that in part suggest that when it became a personal concern, I'm not questioning that, or the exposure, liability exposure to colleagues or the village, that is that kind of a delayed awareness of a public concern? I mean, if you've got corruption and you're a law enforcement officer, should you have the luxury, if you want to report it, that only when it's triggered by the possibility of personal involvement or liability that we should...
Your Honor, I think it's relevant, his motive,
no,
certainly.
No, I understand. That's what I'm trying to get at.
As you wrote in Belk, for instance, right. What happened in Belk is that even though the person had engaged in the wrongdoing themselves over a period of time, and then after they were basically cut out of the deal, they then reported the malfeasance, and you wrote for the majority in that case, that that would be considered reporting a matter of public concern because it involved official corruption. At very worst, Your Honor, because this is a 12B6 motion that was granted, viewing all the facts and the inferences from those facts in the light most favorable to the plaintiff, that would be a consideration. However, as this Court has articulated several times, you specifically in Belk, it has to be the sole or only consideration. And riddled throughout the complaint are expressions of Christofek's other concerns that he had, that there was inequitable application of the law to the citizens driving through Orland Hills, that people who were politically connected were treated more favorably than other citizens, that other police officers may be implicated, that he himself can be implicated. And with regard to a matter of private concern, how about perhaps the most persuasive fact is that Christofek benefited not at all by going to the FBI. Christofek, in fact, did two things. He doomed his future employment as a part-time police officer in Orland Hills, and he reported to the FBI that he may have been himself part of a criminal act. Neither of those things independently affect or benefit Christofek. But at the point of a 12B6 motion, we have to look at the facts and the pleadings in the light most favorable to the plaintiff, and throughout the complaint it expresses not only that he had concerns about his own individual civil and criminal liability, but it expresses that he had concerns about public, politically motivated corruption.
We should read the complaint that he had those concerns from day one.
Absolutely, because the complaint makes clear that he immediately upon being ordered to destroy evidence, to release somebody.
No, I'm not talking about his awareness of the inappropriateness. I'm saying when his public concern aspect started at that time, too.
Absolutely. Whenever you complain about a matter of public corruption, I believe you are speaking on a matter of public concern.
Did it internally. He didn't go to the local press or the FBI, did he?
Immediately, no. He did after he consulted with a private attorney, but he also did have internal...
Consulting, I appreciate that, but I'm worried about this temporal aspect. What if this is 3 years later?
I still believe that if his motivation is not solely based upon his personal benefit, which there is no personal benefit here...
Well, it's seldom a case with his public corruption where we can say it's solely because if you've been touched by the corruption, you always have that possible exposure. And, of course, there's always the mix of public policy concern or public concern. So I suppose we can never pull that string out completely.
No, I understand that. It certainly. But the standard that's been set here, when you take someone who goes and complains about public corruption, the only way that that's converted from a matter of public concern to private concern is when his sole and only motivation...
I don't think you should concede that. Why do we care about someone's motivation? Politicians? What you say, a politician who's motivated by a desire to get a fancy lobbying job or something isn't entitled to free speech? I don't get that motivation business.
I'm saying about the motive, while irrelevant. I can see that motive is a relevant concern.
I'm interested in a person's motivation. If he's speaking on a matter of public concern, that's privileged. He may have loathsome motivations, right?
I certainly agree with that. In the end, what happened here...
Some celebrity? Suppose you have some celebrity singer, and she's told by her producer... You ought to be on Twitter. You ought to be tweeting to your thousands of fans. So she says, all right, do it. And her only motivation is financial. But these tweets are protected by the First Amendment, right?
Certainly.
Telling your fans, don't listen to Taylor Swift or someone, right? My rival. That's all protected.
Certainly, a matter of taste aside, yes. I believe that would be...
Selfish. I just don't see why motivation is in this.
Your Honor, I was trying to emphasize the fact that even viewing in the light least favorable to the plaintiff, we still allege facts...
I'm puzzled by the motivation stuff.
Your Honor, as I believe that probably your case in... apology for the pronunciation. I believe it's Geschwind v. Haydn. It has a very similar analysis to the case here. And in that case, you had a teacher who obviously had a song sung about them where the student had said, we're going to kill Geschwind.
Yeah, he was afraid. He was scared. Right.
Correct.
Yeah.
And even though he was afraid for his own personal safety, he then filed a criminal complaint with the school officer. And in that case, this court, you specifically, Judge Posner, found that that was a matter of public concern. In this case, it is very similar. You have a matter of public concern that someone who was ordered to quash an arrest because someone was politically connected was reported to the FBI. I ask to reserve the remainder of my time.
And just to follow up on what my brother, Judge Flom, said, your position is the temporal issue is really a non-issue.
That's correct. Reserve the remainder of my time.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Are you Mr. Rubery or Mr. Zimmer?
Zimmer.
Okay. Are you splitting your time, or?
Okay. May it please the court, Patrick J. Rubery appearing on behalf of Chief Thomas Scully. This court has long recognized that a plaintiff may plead himself out of court by making allegations which defeat his claim. That can happen even if the plaintiff was not required to include those allegations in the body of the complaint. And that is precisely what has happened here. As you know, Rule 8 does not require fact pleading, but Mr. Kristofek elected to plead facts. And unfortunately for Mr. Kristofek, those facts, accepted as true, doomed his claim. Mr. Kristofek now is essentially attempting to amend his complaint on appeal. He had an opportunity below to amend his complaint.
Okay, so get to the point. What is it? How has he pleaded himself out of court?
His own allegations, accepted as true, demonstrate that he's done so. He repeatedly, and without any prompting from us, said that he was speaking because he was concerned about his own skin.
Well, of course. So what? I don't understand that.
Well, because the speech...
You ask yourself why people in the marketplace of ideas are speaking. You'll probably find 95% of them are speaking for entirely selfish motives.
Yes, but those 95% are not public employees.
Trying to avoid being laid off, so you...
But he's a public employee, Judge. There's a different standard.
So what? No, public employees aren't allowed to participate in the marketplace of ideas?
Not while they're working, and not to the same extent as...
You mean a senator? A senator who says something for the sole purpose of getting reelected? You mean that's not free speech?
Well, if he says something within the four walls of Congress, he's absolutely privileged. He can say whatever he wants to.
No. He says it outside. He's campaigning.
If he says it outside and if it's libelous, he can be sued.
Pardon?
Oh, are you saying if he lies, can he be sued for that?
No. This is a person. He's a senator. He's desperate for reelection. So he says things that he thinks will please his constituents. He doesn't care about the things he says. These are not his personal beliefs. He just, well, maybe he's in a state, you know, they love guns. So he goes around saying he loves guns. He doesn't love guns, but he's just saying it. He's just doing it to get reelected. He has no disinterested motive in, right? But that's obviously protected. You don't go looking into the motivations of people, whether they're public employees or anybody else, for speaking.
I disagree, Judge. Connick stands for the opposite.
What do you mean? Connick? So you can attack any public employee who says anything. So suppose you have a head of the Federal Trade Commission or something like that says something nice about Google. Maybe he's doing it because he hopes to be hired by Google. You mean what he said is not protected because he has this personal motivation?
Well, the question is...
Extraordinary expansion of...
I disagree, Judge.
The First Amendment, start looking into people's motives.
Well, the case law supports our position, Judge.
There's a lot of talk about that. That doesn't mean there are any actual cases which bear any resemblance to this, where a person is reporting public corruption. May do it out of fear, but what difference does this make? It's important for the FBI to learn about this crooked activity in Illinois, and so we want to encourage that stuff.
Well,
if I have a person fired because he goes to the FBI and reports public corruption, you think that's a good thing to have him fired?
Well, I don't think he was...
You think it's a good thing to have him fired because his motive was selfish?
That is the law, Judge.
Answer my question. Do you think it's a good thing to fire a person for reporting public corruption?
Well, I don't believe that happened here, A and B, but whether
answer
it's a good...
Answer my question, yes or no.
Is it a good thing to fire someone for reporting public corruption?
Yes.
I imagine no, but I don't think that's
imagine
the issue.
No, but you're not sure.
Well, it really depends on
what...
Why
don't you say yes or no? Okay, now tell me the situation which it's a good thing to fire an employee who truthfully reported public corruption.
Truthfully, all right, that's different. Yes, I think that's a bad thing to do.
Mm-hmm. So let's look at what's in the complaint, the actual language of the complaint, because he says the driver's mother was politically connected to the village. He says unequal application of the law due to political considerations was improper, possibly illegal. And I'm quoting the complaint. The driver evaded prosecution for improper political motives, end quote. In the complaint, he alerted the FBI to possible political corruption. And in the complaint, these words, concerns about possible public corruption and illegal activity. So how is that not included in the report? I understand he's more concerned about his person, but these words are all in his complaint.
I understand that, but he repeatedly and unequivocally said that the reason he went there and his motivation was to
protect himself. Yeah, but you don't have any case that says that motivation, that the predominant factor has to be, reporting it was a matter of public concern. I mean, you don't have any cases to support your position, really.
Well, we cited the Bivin case.
Just imagine what the marketplace of ideas would look like if people who participated in it for selfish reasons were not entitled to free speech. So movies wouldn't be protected by the First Amendment. The people who make them, the people who work for them, the big businesses, they're all motivated just by money.
But the Supreme Court has long recognized that this applies to public employees. Your example, Judge, concerns people who are non-public employees. I don't believe Taylor Swift's a public employee.
Well, how about people who make recruiting movies for the Defense Department?
They are probably private contractors, and they would not be governed by that.
Well, not clear that private contractors aren't covered by government privileges.
That I don't know, Judge. That's not an issue here, but I do know that just merely the fact you sell something to the government doesn't mean you waive your First Amendment rights, or it doesn't make you an arm of the government, and somehow new rules apply. So, yeah, if you're telling me that Boeing...
Working for the government, you waive your First Amendment rights. Is that your proposition?
No, it's not my proposition. What my proposition is, you don't have the same degree of First Amendment protection, because otherwise, anytime somebody said something and caused a workplace dispute or issue, it would be a federal case.
Why should this fellow get protection?
Because he repeatedly and unequivocally said that he was acting out of his own personal interest.
Why should that make a difference?
Because it was not his intention to bring wrongdoing to light. It was his intention, basically, to protect himself. And
intention was to bring it to light in order to protect himself. Now, why shouldn't someone who does that with those motives be protected? We want to have public corruption exposed, so why don't we give him legal protection to expose?
Well, the thing is, I don't read the complaint that way. I don't think he did that, Judge. I read the complaint and his own allegations and accept them as true. And he certainly could have amended his complaint.
Look, he brought it to the attention of the FBI. We want that, don't we?
Well...
Do you want that?
Do we want people to protect...
You answer my question.
I was trying to.
Look, you listen to me. Do you want people... police officers, if they discover public corruption, do you want them to go report it to the FBI? Is that a good thing or a bad thing? And you answer yes or no.
It's a good thing.
Okay.
Any other questions?
No.
Right. Well, Your Honor.
But that fact itself, that he reported it to the FBI, that is a fact that takes it out of just his private realm where, say, he's talking to his neighbors or he's saying it to his friends. And so, I mean, that is a crucial factor that I think kicks this thing to beyond, his personal motivation, because he goes to an outside entity. Okay. I assume you have
any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Rubery. Mr. Zimmer?
May it please the Court. My name is Austin Zimmer. I represent the Village of Laurel Hills. Regardless of how this Court determines on the underlying constitutional issue, it's clear by plaintiff's complaint that they are unable to plead a Monell claim against my client, the Village of Orland Hills. They admit that there is no policy or practice claim, so that leaves them with one argument, and it's the argument that they asserted in their response to the motion to dismiss, and they're asserting now this court, is that the decision was made by Chief Scully, a final policymaker, and that he had final policymaking authority when it came to the issue of hiring and firing in regards to the plaintiff. However, when you look through their entire 59-paragraph complaint, Chief Scully is never alleged to be a final policymaker. He's never alleged to have policymaking authority. So what they try to...
Well, what is the situation in Orland Hills? Does the police chief have final authority over employees?
The police chief has delegated that authority, Your Honor, through the village board. The village board has final policymaking authority, and they delegate the authority to the chief. The chief doesn't have the authority to delegate.
Can you appeal from the chief to the board?
In this instance, he was a probationary police officer. So as they allege, and that is their allegation, that's the inference they want the court to draw, is the fact that because there was no place to appeal, that he had unreviewable authority.
Why wouldn't that make the police chief the final policymaking authority with regard to employment of probationary officers?
The reason, Your Honor, is because what this court has ruled in the Valentino case and the Kujawski case is mere unreviewed discretion to make hiring, firing decisions, which the chief has in regards to probationary police officers, does not amount to final policymaking authority. There must be two things. There must be an actual delegation of authority to set policy for hiring and firing, not just a delegation of the final authority to hire and fire. So even though he has that final delegation.
A recent case, actually the Geschwind case that was mentioned recently, where the principal, I think I have this right, the principal fired some troublemaker, and when the board of the school district was asked about this fellow's authority, they said, "Well, we let him handle employment problems. So if he wants to fire a teacher, that's it. Now, we don't inquire into the reasons or anything of that sort." And we said that, well, the board had made the principal the final authority on hiring and firing, and that brought it within Monell. So how is this different?
I think that's different because based on that, the fact that, hey, we give that to the principal, it's his decision, they're delegating that authority to set policy to determine who are going to fire stuff. In the village of Orland Hills.
Did that here with regard to probationary police officers?
It's not alleged at all in the complaint that they did anything of the sort to that. There's no allegation in the complaint that he has, and that's the key. They have to allege it. There's been no allegation in the complaint that any policymaking authority has been delegated to the
chief. If there's no appeal and there are no standards, wouldn't he be de facto the final authority on probationary employees, probationary officers?
And that's, I think that's fine if he is the final authority because that's how the board set the policy. And that's the two things. They have to have, the chief would have to be a final policymaker for purposes of Monell. He'd have to have the ability to set policy and then carry out that policy. Here he's carrying out policy that the board has delegated to them. So I think that's the difference and that's the distinction, Your Honor.
But in this Monell claim, and of course we're here in motion to dismiss land, the complaint alleges the deputy chief told the plaintiff the decision to relieve the driver was, quote, above you and I, end quote. The plaintiff was not sure, that's a quote, if the order to release, quote, came from the police department or the mayor's office. It was in the complaint that the driver had high-level political connections. And Orland Hills is a very small community. I mean, it's, you know, you have to string all those things together, but for 12B6 purposes, isn't that sufficient? That they're to suggest that the village had a policy and practice of favoring those with political connections and and keeping that silent and firing anybody who objected or punishing someone who objected to the policy?
It's not sufficient, Your Honor, because nowhere in the complaint do they allege that the village board had final policy-making decision in regards to employment. They don't allege anywhere in the complaint that the mayor or the mayor's office had final policy-making decision in regards to employment. And further, they don't allege that he was fired pursuant to any village board action or pursuant to any actions of the mayor. Those are the things they have to allege to prove that there was some sort of municipal action, municipal policy, or municipal policymaker making the decision to terminate him. And the complaint is 100% defective in that regards. There's no allegation. The word policymaker, policymaking authority is not mentioned anywhere in the complaint. So to rise to the level of Monell liability, it's just not there.
Well, it's pretty unlikely that the board would tell the police chief to fire anybody who doesn't quash tickets to politically connected people. Isn't it more likely that it's a very tiny police department, like four or five people? So isn't it more likely that, especially with respect to probationary officers, the authority has simply been given to him or ceded to him to do what he wants with these people? And so he becomes the final policy-making official for probationary officers. Isn't that plausible? And as Judge Williams said, we're very early stage in litigation.
Your Honor, it may very well be plausible, but it wasn't pled in the complaint, and that's their burden, their responsibility. And it wasn't pled that he was the final policymaker. It wasn't pled that he had a final policymaking decision, and that's what's required for purposes of Monell liability, and which just was not done in this case.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Zimmer. And Mr. Carlson, do you have anything further?
Yes.
Since we didn't visit Monell much during my initial or at all, I'd like to address that first. With regard to what is pled in the complaint, it is pled not only the facts as were illustrated by Judge Williams, but also the fact that the chief had final, unreviewable authority. And in addition to that, he explained the standard that it was applied. It was applied that people who go to the FBI are not trustworthy and should not hold the office. A factual clarification is that Chris Defeck was not a probationary police officer. He was a part-time police officer. But roughly even less protection than a full-time probationary police officer, because they would have to at least be terminated theoretically by a board of fire and police commissioners. Whereas part-time police officers, as is alleged in the complaint, can be terminated by the chief with unreviewable authority. Mr. Rewberry, in his argument regarding the private concern matter, continued to say unequivocally and repeatedly said it was a matter of personal concern. Except for it was very equivocal. There were several places, paragraphs 17, 19, 20, 23, 25, 47, 48, 51, 52, of plaintiff's complaint all talk about concerns that Chris Defeck had other than his personal concerns about civil and personal liability. As such, we ask that you reverse Judge Deryagian's decision. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Carlson. We thank